Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in glory of God with the holy angels."
In the doubt, and to know you is to love you, and to know so little else I need you. Oh, how I need you.
Pastor Linda sends an email every Monday morning to our kitchen table leaders. And the email is designed to try to help our kitchen tables prepare for worship the coming Sunday. And then our kitchen tables gather together and they work together around some of these questions that help us get ready. And so on Monday, she sent out an email that said something like this: "Invite your kitchen table to begin by sharing with one another any questions they have about grief, dying, and death. Do not feel pressure to answer the questions. Instead, please take some notes on the questions raised and email them to me, to Pastor Linda, and we hope to weave some of these questions into our worship series. We then post these on our blog for anybody that wants to see those. We started to get worried, though, around Tuesday because the email responses started to come in from the kitchen tables. And then we got more worried on Wednesday because they kept coming in. So they said things like this: "Really? What's the goal for this series? Is this going to be depressing for 6 weeks? Why death and dying for 6 weeks? Really? ? When I was in college, I took a class with a professor. The class was called Controversial Biblical Interpretation, and he is was an emeritus professor. He was a Baptist pastor from the South who had moved up, and he taught both Bible and theology. And the class was called Controversial Biblical Interpretation. And I don't really remember exactly what happened the first day, but I do remember exactly what Professor Miller wore. He wore tan pants and a white shirt, like a Latin American shirt. You know, it's got the cool embroidery stuff on it. And he had sandals on, and he had a cross upside down. So he was in his 80s. So I assumed, like, this was a mistake. Like, he didn't really have the pin tight enough. You know how that happens sometimes? And it kind of turned 180 degrees. Perfectly upside down was this cross. He's kind of old. This is probably not going to go very well. And then the second class, he showed up in the exact same outfit. And at first when I saw him, I thought, this is really not going to go well. But then every day for the rest of the semester, he wore the exact same thing. I actually never saw the man in anything except that winter, summer in Des Moines, Iowa, no matter what. It was clear to me, though, as the class continued, that he wasn't just crazy. See, he was a pastor from the South whose church had been integrated in the early 1960s, and both his home and the church had been burned to the ground. This was a person who knew what it meant to die and to be reborn, to give your life fully to God. He wasn't the first person to turn the cross upside down either, it turns out. See, Alexandria, Origen of Alexandria wrote about this, that Peter was crucified in an inverted cross. You see it up there. Some people say that Peter chose this because he did not want actually to die in the same way that Jesus did. Professor Miller would say that's kind of a nice way to try to reread the history. But the truth is that the Roman Empire used the cross as a torture device. And then they turned it upside down to make it even worse. This was state-sanctioned terror before we had Twitter to write about this and to wonder about this. Folks, today, I know some people who were watching the Grammys or a couple weeks ago. People today have seen this, and it kind of now has this vague overtone of like anti-Christian propaganda. You'll see it. People get tattoos of this upside down. But the original purpose of this was to frighten people. This was like the worst kind of torture, then inverted and made even worse. This is how those early followers of Jesus, so many of them, found their end. This was what their death looked like. And Professor Miller chose every single morning to take this cross and to pin it onto his shirt as a reminder of God's call to lose your life in order to gain it. The first 8 chapters in Mark's gospel move really abruptly. It's hard to slow them down. Jesus is healing folks who are on the margins and trying to bring them back to the center. He's telling parables that make little sense to me oftentimes. And then he moves on to another parable right after it. And then he heals and brings people together. And then he feeds thousands of folks with some crumbs. And then he walks on water. And then here we have him at the very center of Mark's gospel. The very center of the gospel. See, he'd been telling folks all along, like, this isn't just about you, but those Gentiles out there, they deserve God's love too. That was their rainbow flag of all means all. It's not just today that we put that out. It was Jesus that did it in his day that said, not just you all, but the Gentiles too. Even them, we have to count them. And Jesus says, yes. So there they've done all this stuff, all of that. Jesus turns to the disciples and says, who do people say that I am? And so they start to talk about this. Like, there's a lot of ways you could go with this question, right? Who do people say that you are? And they bounce around. Some people say John the Baptist, the one who baptized you. Others say Elijah, and still others, they think that you're one of the prophets. Jesus stops him and says, but who do you say that I am? And then Peter comes up with the like perfect one word answer. Peter rarely comes up with anything perfect. So this is Peter's moment, folks. Like, catch this. The Messiah, one word. Peter sums it all up. All of these healings, all of this work that Jesus had done to bring people together, to turn systems that were unjust upside down, Messiah. It's a model confession. And then the sequel becomes the most disturbing thing that you can possibly imagine. Because then Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. If Jesus had email and sent this out to the kitchen table leaders, this is when the email would start coming back. Like, really? Is it going to be depressing? 6 weeks on this? Are you sure you're going the right way? See, Peter doesn't even want to send the email out because he's afraid that it'll get forwarded on. So he takes Jesus to the side and says, listen, dude, I think you've got this all wrong. I said Messiah. And you were like, yes. See, Peter doesn't get it at all. What kind of Messiah says we're going to go into suffering and then death? You're the one we've been waiting for. Suffering and death. Really? This is where the soundtrack halts to a stop. Clearly, this is what Jesus is teaching them, though. And Peter thought he knew better. And I don't know, maybe you're like me sometimes. Like, I think I know better. So Peter has this very straight way that he wants to set Jesus. And Jesus has this really queer notion of what his calling is going to be. And Jesus is going to be taken aside, and Peter's going to tell him what to do. Maybe you have these moments, I know I do, where we're like, we're going on our way, and no matter what, even a word from Jesus himself is like not going to shake the truth that I know. I've got this figured out. And had Jesus told me this, that the Messiah is going to be one who dies and suffers, I think I'd want to take him aside too and like, let's try to get this straightened out, dude. That can't be the right direction. They were waiting on someone to lead them to victory against an empire that was taking that cross and crushing the people. So to say you were going to go up on that too, you were going to suffer, how in the world could that possibly be redemptive? Or maybe you think, I'm not like Peter at all. I wouldn't rebuke Jesus in those ways. There's one scholar, W.H. Hewlett Glower, who says it this way: our rebukes are of a kinder and gentler nature. We respond with benign neglect, insipid indifference. We'll never touch hair of his. We'll only let him die. See, Jesus hears Peter out over on the side, and then Jesus pulls them all back together, and then it gets real. Because Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. Another word for that is deceiver. And Jesus had met a deceiver out in the wilderness. And that deceiver had wanted him to go in this direction. And the direction was one of glory. Like, look out over all these lands. This can be yours. That's as glorified as it can get. And that's what the deceiver was offering in the wilderness. And Jesus kept his head down and said, no, God has something different in store for where I'm heading. And he does at this moment as well to Peter. That's not the way. The way you've been imagining, that's not the one. The way forward is actually the cross and suffering and death. Martin Luther had a phenomenal way of talking about this. He talked about it as the theology of glory versus the theology of the cross. And so I want to invite us to tease that apart a little bit. One scholar writes about it this way: the theology of glory is built on what appears to be self-evident about life and our assumptions and about the ways we expect God to act in the world. The theology of the cross, however, is grounded in God's self-revelation in the weakness of suffering and death. Theology of glory confirms what people want in a God, and the cross contradicts everything that people imagine in a God. For Luther, to know God is to know God in Christ, and to know Christ is to know God in the suffering, in the midst of that. See, the theology of glory calls us to accomplishment and wisdom and to celebrate those things, and the theology of the cross calls us to look into the real world of suffering and death and to discern where God might be bringing liberation and freedom in those moments. The cross declares that the church is not Christendom. Faith is not certainty, and hope is not optimism, and love is not painless. God's love certainly wasn't. So I want to be clear, this probably doesn't sound like good news. At least most of the time it doesn't sound like good news to me. It might even feel confusing to you. It does to me sometimes. See, so churches around the world put crosses like this one right up there. And ours is simple, but it's kind of beautiful. It's gold. Others are more ornate. And it's easy for me then to recognize how folks who are trying to follow Jesus could get it so wrong and think it must be about the theology of glory because that looks kind of glorious. It seems like we could imagine how we could get confused and think this is about our own success and effectiveness and our own personal fulfillment. I know that I get confused too often in those ways. Jesus says, though, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their lives for my sake, for the sake of the gospel, the sake of good news, will save it. And I believe that's what Professor Miller was doing every single morning when he chose to get up and to put that cross on upside down to remind himself of what the call of God actually is. And have another person in my life who taught me about this call. Her name is Alexi Torres Fleming, and she's a phenomenal, amazing person who lives in the South Bronx. While I was in seminary in New York City, I was blessed to go and work for her for a year and learn from her and with a lot of young people in the South Bronx. And so I want to invite us to just listen and to learn from Alexi for a moment.
I'm Alexi Torres Fleming. I'm from the South Bronx, New York City. I was the executive director and founder of an organization in my community called Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice, where for 20 years I worked with young people and community residents on planning the renewal of our South Bronx community. I grew up in the Bronx River Housing Projects. I was born on Bronx River Avenue, and I never knew that our community was named for the Bronx River, which literally ran two blocks from my home. But through the years had been so industrialized and so polluted that there was no access to it. We could, within 5 minutes, walk onto four major highways. These weren't transportation corridors for us, and yet they were greatly impacting us. Some of the highest asthma rates in the country, not to mention that you could not find a park, not one park in the entire community, that in some corner did not abut a highway. Urban renewal had been promised to us in the South Bronx, but it had not come. Post the burning of the South Bronx, the crack epidemic was really what destroyed and decimated my community. Church was a really, really important place for us. I awoke to the news that my church had been torched the night before. When the press asked what we were going to do, I said, we're going to march again. We began to receive death threats. 1,200 of us marched, seeing those that the world would deem as powerless, speaking for themselves. I understood something different about power in that moment, fundamentally. People coming from the margins and into the center.
So Alexi thought that she could kind of have it both ways for a little while. She was working on Wall Street. She's in her late 20s. And then she was volunteering on the side at the church of her childhood in the South Bronx. And like a lot of the folks there, as the crack epidemic got worse and worse, they decided they were going to have a prayer vigil outside of one of the houses. And it turns out when you do that, you can get yourself in trouble. You could lose your life. What happened there, they woke up the next morning and their church had been torched. And she was asked, she says it right there, she was asked, what are you going to do? And she said the only thing that she knew how to say, we're going to march again. And so she came out and it was pouring rain and 1,200 people from those high rises showed up to say no to that way of suffering that they'd known. They banded together and said, we're going to live into this alike. And Alexi chose to lose the life that she had known on Wall Street, move back into the neighborhood that she had come from, to live in the midst of the suffering that the people knew there, and to try to make a difference, to make a change, to follow the good news. The good news made her lose her own life in order to find it. And it seems to me that that's a way that teaches us about power and about how God comes to us in a way of power that we don't anticipate. Not a way that dominates, but a way that invites in the midst of hurt and suffering to find liberation and hope. And that's exactly what Alexi found as she came alongside those folks that were in that space. See, she talks about it in this way, that on those streets and in the voices and the bodies of people that were deemed powerless by the powers that be, she found the way of the cross, the way of God's hope and healing in the world. To do that, she had to give up on a theology of glory and to set her eyes on a cross and then to walk with God into the midst of that hurt and say, I'm not afraid, even if it means losing her life. I don't know how you hear that kind of a call, but it doesn't feel depressing to me in the slightest. It feels alive. It feels challenging and hopeful and infinitely complicated, but it feels real. It feels real, and I think it's that kind of a way in which we have to go to die to our own egos so that we can move into that suffering and lose our lives in community with others, with God in the midst of our neighbors and our neighborhood. I believe that's what happens to me at moments in my life when I actually let myself be open to the parts of me that are about glory and see God let those die so that I can be opened into being in relationship in community with others. See, we reflected on this last week as we looked about a baptism. That's what the movement of baptism is. And our deep tradition has ways of teaching us about grief. And next week, we're going to gather together to reflect on how might we learn from the past to understand how we grieve more faithfully in this day. And then we're going to have questions around what in the world does Jesus' death actually mean to us? Like today, it's that Jesus' death calls us into a life of suffering, to lose our lives for something even bigger than us. But how do we make sense of Jesus' death? And in 2 weeks, we're going to wonder about that. But this morning, what I want to invite you to hold is, who do you say that Jesus is? Professor Miller got up every morning and put that cross on upside down as a reminder. It's Peter's cross. What is that theology of the cross? What does that way mean for you? And what in the world do you love so deeply? Do you believe in so profoundly that you'd be willing to die for it? To lose your life for it? What might it mean for you to take up that cross today? Amen. Loving God, may these our gifts help us to become ever more a people, a community that loses its life for the sake of your good news, now and always. Amen.